Did you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur.
Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 347 of The Law Entrepreneur. I'm Neil Tyree, your host once again. And today my guest is Joe Musso. Joe is an attorney just around the corner and across the river from me in Virginia who focuses on nursing home abuse law. Now, we don't oftentimes talk about the substantive aspects of the legal profession on this podcast. But I have to say, I honestly believe that Joe is the first person in 347 episodes that I know of that practices exclusively nursing home abuse. So we're going to dive a little bit into what makes it different and challenging. And, you know, in this case, rewarding, and just kind of get a little more into the weeds regarding developing a nursing home abuse practice. And then on top of that, he's been mentoring attorneys, literally all of his legal profession, and has now launched his own coaching program. And there's a couple of really interesting aspects of his approach to coaching that I think is really refreshing and really sets him apart from other coaches. So without any further delay, here is Joe Musso. Joe Musso, welcome to The Law Entrepreneur.
Thank you, Neil. It's a pleasure to be here. It's kind of surreal. I've listened to your podcast for so long and never really kind of thought about the idea of me being on it. So I'm excited.
Oh, well, that's really interesting to know. I appreciate the listen and the commitment to the program. Well, beyond that, Joe, tell our audience a little bit about yourself and how you came to be where you are today.
Yeah, sure. I am a 25 years next year. So 24 years, almost a quarter of a century, nursing home abuse attorney. And that is what I've spent my entire legal career on. I went to Rutgers Law School and because I missed the deadlines for law schools in Virginia. I was kind of that kid, believe it or not. Even after going to a military college, I kind of was a little slow on the deadlines, ended up having to go out of state, went to Rutgers in New Jersey. And, you know, I would love to tell you I have this great story about how I became a nursing home abuse lawyer, but I really don't. I had a really smart, forward-thinking senior partner who was, you know, wintering in Boca Raton, Florida at the time, comes into his first year associate's office. I was actually a law clerk at the time. And he comes in and he goes, "This stuff's going on down in Florida. They're suing nursing homes," which sounds crazy to me, but they're making money doing it. And, you know, it seems to be something that's going to be all over the place because as we get older, more and more people are going to go in. And he basically said, you know, if you'd like to take your law clerk job and turn it into an associate position here, tell me that you'll learn nursing home work and try it up here. And that was it. And that was 25 years ago. Wow. And now I will say, you don't stay a nursing home abuse lawyer for 25 years that way.
No,
yeah,
that's for sure. In fact, I liken it a little bit to family law. You know, people who stay in family law long-term stay in it because they enjoy it and they find it challenging and they recognize that every family has a story and hopefully they're leaving the people behind better off than where they were. And I'm assuming that you feel the same way, that every family, every abuse case is unique unto itself. It's personal. You know, you're helping people.
Yeah. I mean, I'll tell you that I don't think you can do nursing home abuse. I think, you know, it's interesting that analogy to family law, because I look at family law and I go, oh gosh, I could never, I just could never do it.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. I mean, I think the people who stay in that for, you know, a quarter of a century, it's not because it's miserable for them. Right. So, you know, with nursing home abuse, I don't think you can not have passion for it and do it. Because if you think about it, all of the traditional measure of damages that you have available to you are blunted in my cases, right?
For sure. So, absolutely.
Yeah, you got no life, you've already passed your actuarial life expectancy. There's no cases, lost wages. And your client was already so sick, vulnerable, and frail before the thing you're suing about that they needed 24/7 care. And every single one of them is subject to all sorts of Medicare, Medicaid, TRICARE liens, you know, government liens that make it even more complicated. So it's just, oh, and to make it worse, they're technically medical malpractice cases. So you're going against great medical defense attorneys who, you know, are the best in the business. So it's, right. it's not easy work. It's hard. Like Tom Hanks says in League of Their Own, though, it's the hard that makes it great. I mean, that's what's, you represent the most vulnerable people in the world.
And the sad part is, frankly, is that it's one of the most disgraceful aspects of our society here in the U.S. And, you know, I'm going to be on my soapbox for a little bit. You know, when you see how the elderly are cared for in other countries around the world, what we do and the abuses that we heap upon, you know, our elder generation is just staggering. And so I'm shocked that I don't find more attorneys doing what you're doing. But frankly, as I mentioned to you earlier, I think in the 6 years that I've been doing this, I think you're the first one that I've spoken to that is doing nursing home abuse cases.
You know, I'll tell you, from the perspective of the business of law, which I know is, you know, real kind of front and center for a lot of your listeners, I have these really, you know, we have these really unique problems in the nursing home practice that don't seem to really translate to other areas. And you're hitting on one of them. I mean, it's been 6 years. You've got this super popular podcast about, you know, lawyers and the business of law. And I'm the first nursing home abuse attorney that you've had on it.
Yeah.
The truth is, the barrier to entry, the difficulty of the cases and the learning curve that is so steep for how does a nursing home operate? How do they get paid? You know, then medical malpractice law in the various jurisdictions. How does the nursing home work? What are the standards of care, the experts? It's very, very complicated work. And I just don't see enough lawyers out there. I'm in this weird place where I have more cases than I could possibly handle. And I know the other nursing home lawyers, because I've helped mentor several who now run their own nursing home, you know, sections.
Practices, or firms, yeah.
And they have the same thing. You know, there's so many cases.
Well, again, isn't that a disgraceful situation?
No, it's
now
terrible.
Look, I have been to some really great facilities.
Oh,
and in fact, you know, as an estate planning attorney, I just dealt with a client at a facility here in Montgomery County, Maryland, where I'm located, that frankly, I would love to live in. I told her, oh my God, this is the greatest thing since sliced cheese. I could only hope. She wasn't happy and she wanted to move back to her home. And that's what we ended up doing. But there are some great facilities.
Of course there are.
I'm sure. And even some bad cases occur in great facilities.
Absolutely. Right? You know, I mean, falls happen and, you know, bad outcomes do happen. Every single resident that I represent, like I said, is so sick and so frail and so vulnerable that they needed 24-hour a day, 7 day a week, 365-day a year nursing care. So bad outcomes happen all the time. That's one of the biggest challenges of being a nursing home abuse lawyer, is identifying cases, because they're expensive. I mean, these are medical malpractice cases. They're very expert laden. And it's not uncommon.
They're expensive to litigate.
Yes, very.
Yeah, right.
Very expensive to litigate. And, you know, in the contingency fee world, I mean, the reality is you lose, you're typically out that money. I mean, your client's very rarely paying you back for that. And so we have to be really careful about the cases that we choose and determining whether a case is from poor care or just a poor outcome is really the job. I mean, it's 80% of the job is making sure you're choosing the right case. But once you know, because the worst, and this is not uncommon to other litigations, but bad nursing home cases just get worse and worse the more you litigate them. And strong nursing home cases just get stronger and stronger the more you litigate them.
Yeah. Well, as a former personal injury attorney as well, I think, you know, it's the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, the bad cases became more expensive and more difficult to pursue. The good cases pretty much ran themselves and got stronger as time goes on. Well, I think, you know, we don't normally talk about the substantive aspect of law on this program, but, you know, I wanted to delve into that a little bit because I think it is a glaring need. And frankly, to some of our listeners who are considering how might I niche down my practice, if this at all resonates with you, I really urge you to look into it because it's just a glaring need in this country.
And I say this to everybody, Neil. I've been saying this for 25 years. You know, I'm not, and I think like you pointed out, I think you have to be kind of a true believer to do this work. Like I could find easier ways to make a living in law than suing nursing homes. And so I'm a real true believer in what I do. And so I say this all the time. I love that I'm getting the platform here to say it again. If you're out there and you want to learn nursing home law, I mean, I will help you. I'm not looking for a piece of anything. I want more nursing home lawyers. Again, this is somewhat kind of weird, I think, because we think of ourselves as competitors. If you're looking at the problem of elder abuse in our institutionalized elderly, and that's your cause, you're not real worried about competition, quite frankly. There's more people needed to pick up the mantle. Like I said, I mean, one of the greatest contributions of my legal career is I helped mentor and lead young lawyers who are now starting their own firms with this, and they're going to teach younger lawyers how to do it too. So, you know, it is a tough niche, but it's a niche that is super, super rewarding and can be profitable, obviously. I mean, like I said, I've done it for a quarter of a century.
Right. Well, it's quite a legacy that you're leaving behind yourself. You know, like personal injury, it's heavily, well, let me go back to one other thought. One of the criticisms of personal injury attorneys, you know, we hear it all the time, ambulance chasers and, you know, that kind of thing that gives all attorneys a bad name at times. Do you have that perception?
You don't get it?
Okay.
No, I get told I'm a hero all the time. I'll be honest.
But there's, you don't have people suggesting that it wasn't that bad a fall or they're not that badly hurt or anything along those lines?
Oh, do you mean, do I have clients who are trying to milk the system?
Sure.
Oh, I see. Very rare. I don't want to say it doesn't happen, but it's very rare. I will tell you that the number one reason that I turn a case down, and I turn down probably 8 out of 10, if not 9 out of 10 now, is because I might be able to get a recovery, but after the attorney's fee, the litigation expenses, the liens are repaid, the value of the case just isn't significant enough
to make
that the family would get paid. I could make money on it, but the client wouldn't see anything. And I don't want to, you know, you're not trying to do this work to get a fee while your client goes, Joe Musso for 3 years litigated and
he made $20,000. I made 200. Right.
That's right.
Yeah. So I had the same issue in personal injury for the exact same reasons.
So, yeah, I mean, that's the number one reason. And I will tell you that, and I'm sure in personal injury, we hear this too, but I mean, I've had multiple clients that would be more than happy to sign something. And they say this all the time. You know, I'll sign something saying that I don't need any money. You know, I have clients who donate all the money to a charity or to, you know, my clients really can't sleep at night because they chose the place typically. So these are usually the kids.
Right. Adult children who have put mom in the nursing home. And now they don't want profit off of it. They want to right what they feel is a wrong.
Right. They're more interested in the nursing home paying than them
getting. Yeah. Interesting. Very interesting. So we probably can dispense with some of the more typical questions that I ask, like how do you market your firm? Where do you get your clients from? I mean, that's pretty self-evident now.
Mostly referrals.
Referrals. Yeah.
A lot of people have nursing home abuse work now on their website or their advertising or their social media, but they're not really handling it. Or if they're handling it, they kind of get themselves into trouble. There's so many like prerequisites and certificates of merit requirements. I mean, you can make a mistake so easy that typically they'll call me and I'll try to walk them through it. And they'll either say, well, it's co-counsel, which is great. I always love to do that. Or they just go, let me refer it to you. So, I mean, 90% of my cases are referrals.
Well, I don't know, also experience where what might appear to be a medical malpractice case can turn into a legal malpractice case.
If you
mess up that certificate or you miss some deadlines there. And so
I'm multi-jurisdictional, I'm in 5 jurisdictions, and now that I'm of counsel to a national firm, Bedsore Law, I can be practicing in any state, and every state's different with that stuff. So it's just very, it's dangerous. You gotta kind of know what you're doing.
So then let's talk then about some of the resources that you use, some of the technology resources that you use to keep yourself afloat, to leverage your expertise, and tell us about your staffing situation and your whole approach to the office and how that may have changed during COVID, that whole kind of story.
So yeah, it's been a huge shift, quite frankly. I was the head of nursing home abuse practice locally that had, 40, 50 lawyers, was in the firm, not in my practice. But I had, a nurse paralegal and 2, pre-suit paralegal and a litigation paralegal and an associate who shared my paralegals. I had a team of people and we were handling a large caseload. And that was for the last like 15 years, that's where I've been. And back in Jersey, before I moved down here, it was a similar kind of situation. I had a large group. I went out and launched my 2 companies, the coaching practice and the law firm, in September of this year. So I'm, 3 months deep. Okay. And so everything has pared down significantly. Now I have a ton of great co-counsel, and that's kind of how this thing is launching, to be honest with you. The thing that's unique about my practice is that there are a lot of lawyers out there that have a couple nursing home cases that they're kind of like looking at going, what am I going to do with this thing? And some of them that are very interested in learning how to do it. And maybe they have an associate that wants to learn how to do it. And so I've got a lot of co-counseling opportunities and of counsel opportunities. And that's kind of how I've been launching. There's more cases than there are lawyers to do them. So it's
attorney who doesn't really understand how to make that work. Tell us, what does it mean to be in an of counsel relationship or co-counseling? And what are the mechanics? Are you signing a co-counseling agreement? And what does that kind of look like?
So a lot of the clients, a lot of the client nursing home cases, obviously, a lot of them are referred directly to me. And I have my own law firm. But again, because they're so expensive, I also got to be careful that I'm scaling up at the right pace, right? So, my wife now, I'm fortunate, my wife, is a paralegal. So that's been helpful. She's working full time to help us launch this though, but she helps a great deal. And then, there's Upwork. So I can send things and get bids on things to do projects or to do, a lot of it too is right now is, as you know, is the building, it's the building of the website and it's the social media and it's the getting yourself the administration of everything. That's been the hardest part. I know how to practice law, but you realize after 15 years of being in a law firm that where everything was kind of plugged in already, all of a sudden you're going, oh, I got to do this myself. How do I do this?
Right. But yeah, that's largely why this podcast exists.
Yeah. Still. And the up council arrangements are great because they have a lot of built-in systems and so they plug you in. Right. So I get a password for their case management software and they give me a license and I work with them in their systems. Now, it's tough because you're learning a lot of different systems if you're.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Do you have your own case management tool that you use for your firm? And then do you have to use somebody else's if you're in a relationship with their company?
Yeah. So I'm using CasePeer. Because
I was just going to ask you if you were using CasePeer.
I'm using CasePeer because the firm that I'm of counsel to, Bedsore Law, uses CasePeer. Mm-hmm. And so the idea of, well, I'm already going to be working with them on a lot of cases. Why would I go and create a second one? But the problem is I'm also, of counsel and associated with Williams and Deloach and other firms. So what ends up happening is yeah, you end up with different case management softwares. But, you know, that's kind of where I am right now. Yeah. But I'm trying, you know, I'm using CaseBeer right now. It's affordable and it seems to be somewhat intuitive for what I'm trying to do. But mostly it was because the place I was of counsel to was using it.
If you've been a listener of this podcast for any time, you know that I sing the praises of Ruby all the time because they're really responsible in my own practice for helping me grow my business, deliver personalized experience to my clients, you know, building customer loyalty, really, in terms of having a consistent front-facing office partner in Ruby, and allows me to stay connected anywhere, anytime to my business through their services. So I can't say enough about Ruby. I'm delighted to have them and continue to have them as a sponsor of this podcast.
As a law firm owner, you take responsibility for driving more revenue for your firm. But how much of that revenue ends up as bottom line profit? Ryan Himmler, the net profit CFO, helps law firms drive more top-line revenue to bottom-line profit. His two game-changing tools are the scorecard, so you can actually know what your numbers are and can make informed decisions, and the action plan, so you know how to get your numbers where you want them to be and drive more net profit. To learn more about Ryan, check out episode 306 of The Law Entrepreneur, and you can get a free profit acceleration call by going to go.oncehub, that's O-N-C-E-H-U-B, go.oncehub.com/profit. I will also tell you, just as an aside, I am a client of Ryan's. I have been working with him for the past 6 months. Frankly, ever since he did that episode with me, I signed on with him to be a client. And I've been thrilled with the kind of information and insight he's been able to give me. So do yourself a favor, you know, get that free call and check out Ryan Kimmler at netprofit.com.
I had the folks on from CasePeer, Gabriella Cubiero, who was one of the original founding members of the company, and Darren Fancher, one of the tech guys, way back on episode 164. Which was in June of 2019. And I had met the folks at, we take this moment, you know, that a commercial break for CasePeer. I have no relationship with them whatsoever. But I met them at, they were in the startup alley at the ABA Tech Show. And the startup alley was almost like a carnival, you know, Barker kind of row. They had these little tiny booths. These were for new startups. And CasePeer was just hitting the market then. And so I was looking for guests, frankly. Right. I came across their little booth and talked to Gabriella. And I told them, honestly, had CasePeer been out when I was doing personal injury work, I might have stayed in personal injury.
Yeah, super intuitive.
Yeah, it's a case management tool for those who are listeners who aren't aware. A case management tool that's optimized for personal injury cases. And it's very intuitive. It does all the things that are unique to a contingency fee matter. And I can't say enough about them. I think it's a great tool if that's the practice area that you're in. And you've already said how similar nursing home abuse is to
And it's, you know, it gives you those kind of things like the client portal. You know, I think one of the things that really can disrupt you is you not getting that deep work because you're always on the phone and you're always responding to inquiries. And so, I mean, I think obviously firstly, you have to make sure that you're keeping your client informed. But to do that easier is to have a client portal where they can kind of check the status right through your software with their own login. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. And I also like the way they integrated the medical records collection.
That was the biggest thing for me. My work is so medical record heavy. As you can imagine, some of these people are in the nursing home for years. So it's thousands of pages. And every time they get sent out to a hospital, I gotta get those records. So it's a huge part of it, without a doubt.
Exactly.
All right. So you got your technology platform in place and you've launched the new firm. Are you working primarily virtually out of your home, or do you have office space that you're also?
No, right now I turned a bedroom, much to my oldest daughter, to my daughter's chagrin. I turned a bedroom into an office. But you know, it's funny. It's so different. Like the reception, I think I thought I was going to have about that. COVID, in a lot of ways, just trained everybody.
Yeah.
That this was okay, right?
Yeah, I read an article yesterday that literally said, "Are we ever going back to the office?"
Right.
And it made a strong argument that for a lot of people, the answer is no.
Right. I miss the office to some extent, though. You know, I can tell you where I think now, again, in my particular situation as a solo right now, I don't have a big staff. I have like basically no staff, but I can tell you that it was very difficult to mentor and to grow and develop younger lawyers and staff during COVID.
Oh, yeah.
I had had a new associate during that period of time. And there's nothing like being next door to your associate knock on your door and go, "I'm lost. I don't know what I'm doing here. Help me," versus these Zoom calls or phone calls or whatever. So I do think you lose something by being virtual. But I can also tell you that my client base, A, they're not really great with technology, so Zoom becomes really challenging for them. But B, they don't really want to drive out to an office either. So
it
kind of works out.
Yeah, for everybody. So let's kind of segue a little bit here, because you mentioned all along you've been mentoring attorneys in how to understand the nuances of a nursing home abuse law. But that's now also morphed into a more generalized attorney coaching practice. What led, you know, what were the steps that led there, and what do you hope to try and do with that business?
Yeah. So to give you the shortest version of this, I mean, I've been fascinated by leadership for a really long time. I ended up going to Virginia Military Institute, which is a, you know, a military college out in Lexington, Virginia, and ended up in their leadership program where they were studying. Essentially, I was working for a Dr. Marino there who was basically studying whether or not VMI, which created a lot of military leaders, was attracting leaders or creating them. That was a, kind of the question he was trying to solve. And I interned for him for years, for three of the years that I was there. And I was found it fascinating. I found that he was able to predict to some degree who would be in various places. And it was really interesting work. And the answer, the short answer was both. Leaders were attracted to VMI and leadership was a skill that could be taught. And when I got out, and I ended up going to law school and then working in the PI world, I noticed that what was taking plaintiff personal injury lawyers and making them leaders was a very different skill set than what actual leadership is. So you would basically be really good at being a trial lawyer. You'd make a lot of money in fees because you won some cases or you settled a lot of big cases. And you were, you know, hyper aggressive and you were really able to do a good job for your clients. And eventually you decided, "I'm giving too much money to the owner of this law firm. I'm going to go hang out my shingle." And then they grow it and they start hiring people. And the skills that got them to make enough money to either leave their firm or obviously the other scenario is they get promoted to, you know, partner, junior partner, then senior partner, and now they're in charge of a team. The skills that got them elevated to those positions are completely different than the skill set necessary to maximize the performance of a team. And it became apparent to me that a lot of people in this world were put into these leadership positions and didn't know how to actually lead. You know, they didn't spend years in a military school. And then I ended up joining up with John Maxwell, who's, you know, a renowned leadership guru and teacher and coach who coaches. It's funny because he coaches the AIGs of the world. So if you're a defense lawyer and you're representing AIG or Geico or Allstate, you're likely getting great coaching on leadership. But if you're suing those companies, you're likely not. And I think that plaintiffs' lawyers have this idea that, you know, we're David versus Goliath. And that we're gladiators. And it's very romanticized. But the truth of the matter is, we're not gladiators. We're generals of armies. And it's our army against their army. And if, you know, if you've ever been in Neil, you've done some plaintiff's work. I mean, if you've ever been in a situation where the other lawyer maybe isn't as talented as you, or isn't as skilled as you, or prepared as you, but his team is, and they're papering you to death, and they're capable, and they're on top of things, and your team isn't, you can lose that way.
Oh, for sure. Even with a better factual case.
Correct. Yes, yeah. Absolutely. And so it just became real obvious to me that leadership was important. And I couldn't help but notice that as I learned and continued to grow in my leadership and intentionally worked on my leadership, I was, and I don't want to say that I was creating them, that they did great work. They were great lawyers. They were great people. But my associates were going off and becoming hugely successful over and over and over again. My staff and I had great relationships, and it wasn't an accident. It was because I had studied all of this, and I knew deeply that I needed to invest and develop my relationships with my team and make sure they were aligned with their own vision for what they want in their life from their profession, not my profession. And when you start to do that and you start to care about your people and you get to know their families and pour into them and develop them, not for you, for them, things take off. And so that's what I learned how to do. And I started coaching in 2009, and I was coaching leaders in other fields, a roofing company and, right. A hairstylist, hair salon owner. And, it was like right in front of me. And I started saying, you know what, I need to do this more for lawyers. And it really was mostly plaintiffs, personal injury lawyers. I really don't coach a lot of, big defense people, because they don't, quite frankly, they don't need it. They're getting it from their clients.
Well, on this program, we've had a lot of coaches in the legal space, and I've dealt personally with many of them. And as I confided to you in our pre-call, I think one of the things that's you apart from a lot of coaches is your devotion to getting training yourself on how to be a better coach. Because so often that's lacking when we're trying to figure out, who might I want to work with? I find it really encouraging to say, well, this guy, Joe Musso, I mean, he's gone through this leadership coaching program, is a, an accredited International Coaching Federation guru or whatever their, whatever their accolade is. Right. And that's different. And I think that translates into what you have to offer. For sure it does.
It's really funny when you think about it. And I think I laugh about this sometimes. We were talking before we got on here today about the barrier to entry as a nursing home abuse lawyer is like super high, because the education you need to get in and to understand the liens and to basically navigate this malpractice trap where a med mal case turns into a legal mal case, as you pointed out, you got to have some real, risk and some ability to withstand some hits to get to the point where you can do that really well. So the barrier to entry for it seems pretty high. And coaching is exactly the opposite. Basically, you can come into being, you can call yourself a coach, and there's no one who's going to come in and smack you for it, right? No one's going to say, well, you can't be a coach because you haven't had a single day of coaching, right? coach training. I think a lot of, and this is changing now with the ICF accreditations and all that, but over the last like 20 years, and I've been, like I said, I went to my first coaching school, to CTI, which is the biggest coaching school in the world, in 2008. So back then, the idea of spending money to go to coaching school was really foreign. Today, it's a little less, but there's still this idea of, well, I've done something for a long time, so I know how to coach. Coaching is actually a skill. And, you can be, and you know this, I mean, you can be really great at something that doesn't make you a great teacher of it.
Right.
And vice versa. I mean, I've had some wonderful teachers who weren't terrific at what they actually did, but they were really great at communicating concepts to me. Yeah. Coaching is a skill that you have to learn.
Yeah. I learned that fact in one of my previous lives as a martial arts instructor. I was not the best martial artist, but I know I was a really, really good instructor.
Right.
And
right.
So the same is true in the coaching world, but very few, I think, as I said, take the time and effort to work on their own coaching and leadership skills in order to be able to offer that to their clients.
And I was just going to say, what's really funny too, is that it's such a great investment for a lawyer if you own a law firm. It is a great investment to go, and even if it's just the basics of coaching, because on some level, that's what you're doing.
That's what you're doing with your staff.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. And I will suggest also to some extent with your client.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Without a doubt.
You're coaching them through the process. And, you know, I used to say half the game was talking the clients off the ledge. You know, right. And you have to understand how to do that. Well, listen, Joe, we could spend the rest of the day.
Yes, sir.
It's been terrific. Tell our audience, what's the best way to reach out to you, either from a nursing home abuse perspective or a coaching perspective?
Yeah. So I'm on, you know, I'm on Facebook and Instagram and LinkedIn. As you can find me, you know, search Joe Musso, you'll find me on any of those platforms. But, you know, MussoLawFirm.com is the law firm and MussoCoaching.com is the coaching practice. So not too complicated. I'm easy to find. You Google my name and you'll find me.
Well, we'll have all of that available in the show notes for our listeners. And I want to thank you again for taking the time to be with us today on The Law Entrepreneur.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me, Neil.
Well, there you have it, boys and girls, another episode of The Law Entrepreneur. I want to thank our sponsors for this episode, our good friends at Ruby. I can't say enough about Ruby. As you know, they've been my virtual receptionist for years now. Couldn't be happier with them. And I really urge all of you, if you need a virtual receptionist, that you give Ruby a chance. Also, Net Profit CFO, as I've mentioned before, Ryan Kimler was a guest on the program some time ago. I liked what he had to say so much, I became a client. And then after I became a client, he became a sponsor. So very happy about that arrangement. If you want to take your understanding of your financials in your law firm to that next step beyond just what your bookkeeper gives you back, give Ryan a call at Net Profit CFO. I don't think you'll be disappointed. If you enjoyed this podcast, do me the great favor of leaving a positive rating and review wherever you listen to your podcast. It really helps with the opportunity for us to get in front of other people. And until next week, I wish you all the best, and we'll see you again here on Law Entrepreneur.